Good morning. My name is Joyce Pickering. Je suis la vice-doyenne pour le programme prédoctoral de la Faculté de médecine à McGill et j'aimerais vous souhaiter la bienvenue à notre cérémonie 2009, Dr. Joseph Wiener, Donning the Healer's Habit Ceremony. We will begin with a musical prelude, and I'd like to take this opportunity to ask you to turn off or turn to vibrate any pagers or telephones you may have. I'd also like to request that you not take photos during the ceremony, but I will remind you that we have a photographer who will take individual pictures both during the ceremony and afterwards. Copies will be available for all the students and their families, as well as a DVD of the entire ceremony. I would now like to ask Dr. Pajdan from our Department of Pharmacology to introduce the E. Medici Quartet.
Thank you, Dr. Pickering, Dean, parents and guests, class of 2012 and group 7. Thank you very much for inviting us to share this momentous event in your development. E. Medici de McGill Quartet was with you, with all the classes before, since the inception of this program, and we are happy to be here. As you know, we are actually four members of a larger group called E. Medici de McGill Orchestra, which has this year been increased by 20 new students, and therefore we could report to the dean that music is doing well at the Faculty of Medicine. We are now 81. Well, and I have to thank our dean for his support. That's the moment to do it. Well, let me introduce my collaborators today, the E. Medici de McGill String Quartet. Kirsten Niles, the first violin. Could you get up so that I see you? He's an MD, PhD student, just finishing her PhD and going back with you to finish her clinical training. Berson Augustin hopes to be joining our Faculty of Medicine as a student. He's now doing research at the Montreal General Hospital. And Jan Bottomer is... Jan Bottomer is a music career counselor here at McGill University, so whoever wants to switch to music, she will give you very good advice. And I'm Ante Pajdan. I occasionally lecture in this hall, and I have tremendous fun with Group 7 every week. Well, for today, we have chosen two brief pieces, both very joyful and, shall we say, promising, very kind of appropriate for your present state. One is the last movement from the American quartet of Czech composer Antonín Dvořák, who spent a few years on this continent and has been influenced by the local music and has influenced everybody else afterwards, particularly some of the film music. And the second piece is another kind of joyful piece. It's an Argentinian tango. If you wish to join us dancing, please. We do hope that this too brief, brisk music give wind to your sails on your tremendous voyage called medicine. Thank you. Thank you.
you very much. Again, welcome to our white coat ceremony. I'm delighted that so many people are here. We have guests in the Martin as well. Hello, Martin. Welcome. I think you will... I'd like to especially acknowledge the presence of our guest speaker, Dr. Howard Brody, Director, Institute for the Medical Humanities at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston, Texas. Welcome, of course, to family and friends of our students. You've contributed to making these students who they are today, and I know that some of you are just bursting with pride right now at the sight of them, and so you should be. They are really wonderful. But students, this day is really for you. You've worked hard over the last year and a few months to learn the sciences that are important to becoming a good physician. You've started to learn interview skills, to think about the values we need and the moral choices that we make as we care for patients. And in a few months, you will no longer be in these lecture halls, but learning with patients in the hospitals, in the clinics, and in offices. And today's a day where we reiterate that medicine is not just a trade or a technique. It's not just about being smart or good with your hands. It's also about your responsibility to patients and society. And when you put on your white coat today, what you are saying to everybody here is that you're willing to assume this responsibility. It's a big responsibility, but I think that everyone here, your friends, your family, and certainly your faculty, are also here because we want to tell you that we will support you to the best of our ability in fulfilling these responsibilities. And so I'm going to call on our Dean of Medicine, Dr. Richard Levin, to speak to you.
Thank you very much, Joyce. I welcome everyone to this poignant and momentous occasion in the lives of our medical students. And I, too, would like to extend a special welcome to those joining us from the Martin Amphitheater. You are not separate from us. You are part of us today. I want to thank the Wiener family, who in years past and under normal circumstances would be sitting here in the front two rows. They are our sponsors. They are our patrons and believe desperately in the importance of this moment in the history of a physician. You can read in your guides about Dr. Joseph Wiener, in whose name this ceremony is given. And they are not here this morning because of an error in cyberspace. And I apologize to them in their absence for this curious event, which had them coming at 2 p.m. rather than at 10 p.m. And we will make this up to our sponsors in some way, but since they will be viewing this videotape, I wonder if you would join me in the usual convention for honoring those who honor us by a round of applause. Thank you for that. I also want to recognize Dr. Don Boudreau, who is the founder of this ceremony, who is an Alfred P. Gold Foundation professor, one of only three in North America recognized for their sustained excellence in making us recall that the fundamental element of becoming a physician is communication and the healing arts and our relationship with our patients. And I want to recognize as well Dr. Barry Slapkoff, the chair of the Physician Apprenticeship System, both for their tenacity in sustaining the program's overwhelming success, and especially to my colleague, Dr. Howard Brody, for joining us this morning to share a wonderful story befitting this occasion in his keynote address. This is a humbling moment for me annually, not as dean, but as physician, to address the class of 2012 and your guests, who include the people who are the most important in your lives, family members, friends who have nurtured and supported you. Today you transition from clinical to clinical health sciences, and we usher you into another family, the family of physicianship. Je vous souhaite la bienvenue, ce n'est pas seulement en tant que doyen, mais en tant que médecin, que j'ai le grand honneur de m'adresser à vous, la classe 2012, et à vos invités, toutes ces personnes qui comptent particulièrement dans votre vie. Vous n'avez pas choisi une voie facile. It's not an easy path, but I tell you, it is the best choice you could possibly have made. And the path that you are on is not, of course, foreign to me. In 1970, God, that's so long ago, I started medical school at New York University. There was no white coat ceremony then. After a few weeks in that first memorable year, I received a slip of paper, an unceremonious, multiply reduplicated scrap that asked me to report to an obscure room in the old Bellevue Hospital on First Avenue in New York City. And there I was to pick up my white coat, and in those days, white pants as well. I walked through a maze of drab green corridors and came to a coat room. There was only one person there, an old seamstress at her sewing machine. She looked up over her glasses and said, "Hi, Doc, here for your coat." She looked at me for a moment, assessed my size and shape, looked across her room filled with white coats, grabbed a starch coat from a pile, and asked me to try it on. It fit perfectly, of course. She said, "Doc, you're gonna see some things." "Some things, Doc." I must have been her 10,000th student by then. We talked a bit, and then to say goodbye, to usher me out because she had work to do, she said, "Listen, you take care of our patients now, Doc. You do a good job, okay?" And I promised her that I would. And I left. That was the ceremony. This ceremony has evolved, appropriately so, I think, since the dawning of my healer's habit almost 40 years ago. But what the simple white coat symbolizes remains the same. It is the cloak worn by a group of very compassionate people. And today, you, the class of 2012, will wear it. It derives all of its symbolism from you as complete healer. You as comfortable with the patient in pain, the patient in joy, the patient in dying moments. I tell you that you can make the most extraordinary difference in another human's life and thereby in all of humanity's. Today you enter a world that is reserved for a privileged few. You have earned your right to be here. And I, along with the hundreds of family members here today, know that you will do us proud. You will renew our privilege to wear the habit of the healer. So I say to you all with great joy, take care of our patients now, docs. You do a good job. Merci. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Levin. This ceremony, as Dr. Levin mentioned, is called the Dr. Joseph Wiener Donning the Healer's Habit Ceremony. It's in honor of Dr. Joseph Wiener, a graduate of our Faculty of Medicine in 1941, and someone who exemplified the skilled and caring professional that we'd like you to become. Dr. Wiener also had four children, all of whom graduated from medical school at McGill. And for that, of course, we need to thank not only Dr. Joseph Wiener, but his wife, Dr. Lily Wiener. And she received her very own white coat last year. As Dr. Levin mentioned, unfortunately, they can't be with us right now, so we won't have an address by Dr. Robert Wiener, but I'll move directly to our keynote address. Our keynote address is by Dr. Howard Brody. Dr. Brody received both his MD and his PhD in philosophy from Michigan State. He completed a residency in family practice at the University of Virginia and became a professor of family practice, philosophy in the Center for Ethics and Humanities in the Life Sciences at Michigan State. He became the director of the Institute for Medical Humanities at the University of Texas Galveston in 2006. He's written about 9 books and has a particular interest in Sherlock Holmes and writes for the Baker Street Journal, but he's not going to talk to us about that today. One of his areas of expertise is the power of narrative in medicine, and all physicians and medical students have experienced this power. We sit through a lecture by a world-renowned scientist on the fascinating discoveries about a particular disease. Then, the scientist starts to tell us a story about a particular patient with this disease, and we all sit up, and the room falls silent, and we listen with rapt attention because somehow the story touches a part of us that the scientific facts never can. Dr. Brody is someone who's explored the power of this narrative, and we look forward to hearing him. Dr. Brody.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be asked to join in this great milestone that you folks are celebrating today and to be part of this ceremony. I'd like to add my thanks to the Wiener family for their kind sponsorship of this event. And what I would like to do with you today is, as we heard, tell you a story. And I heard this story myself as a result of visiting the National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C., but I'm happy to say that it's at root a Canadian story. I had not been familiar with the term Anishinaabe, but as a resident of Michigan, I certainly knew the names Chippewa and Ojibwa, and I found out that the Anishinaabe people consider their ancestral homeland to be the area to the northwest of Lake Superior. And the museum has the usual exhibits about their costume and dwelling and so on, but this story is part of the what they consider the Indian cosmology exhibit. And in sharing the story with you, I need to give special thanks to the people who shared the story with me via the museum, these community curators and the traditional artist who prepared the materials that I'm about to share with you. And the story is the story of Little Boy. And the story tells us that at first, the Creator made the earth, made the people, and the Creator gave the people food, clothing, shelter, medicines, good health, and all the things that the people needed to flourish. And the people were inducted into the teachings of the Creator, so they knew how to cooperate both with themselves and with Mother Earth to share this bounty that the Creator had made for them. And they were a flourishing and healthy and happy people. But time went on. And as time went on, slowly the people moved farther away from the teachings of the Creator. They forgot about cooperation among themselves. They forgot about their belongingness to Mother Earth. And things started to become sadder for the Anishinaabe people. They sank into unhappiness. They began to have want. They began to suffer. And something new appeared among them that had never been there before. They became ill and sick. Now, the elders apparently sank into a state of demoralization and just sort of sat around and didn't know what to do in this unfortunate circumstance. But a young one, this person called Little Boy in the story, took pity on his people in their suffering and hoped to do something and wasn't sure just what to do, but decided that sitting around moaning and whining at the camp was not the right thing to do, so he needed to go and set off on a journey. So he set off on these travels. And his travels eventually took him to the four points of the compass. And two things happened as he went on these travels. He traveled east and saw the great saltwater sea. He traveled south and he became tired and hot and dizzy, and he found that the fruit of the juniper bush would sustain him and bring his strength back as he developed these symptoms. He traveled west and was taught by the buffalo how his flesh would feed the people and how his hide would create shelter and clothing. And he traveled north and saw the ways of the caribou and the fishing and how these resources could help the people. And so all as he traveled, he learned from Mother Nature. Mother Nature became his teacher. And he found helpers who would show him the beauty and the resources of the natural world and how the Indians could take from the natural world and share with the natural world this bounty. And the other thing that happened is he grew up. First he became an adolescent, then he became a young man. And finally, as he finished his journey to the north, he was getting to be an old man. Now, all through this time, this entire lifetime of learning from the natural world, he had never forgotten his quest. He had never forgotten why he left. He knew that it was to help the suffering of his people that he had engaged in this long journey. And now that he knew all this wonderful knowledge from nature, he had to hurry back in his remaining days to the camp of his people so he could share with them this wonderful information that he had acquired. So he hastened back to the camp of the Anishinaabe people. And when he arrived near the camp, it was nightfall. And he decided he would lay down to sleep at the side of the path and would sleep that night, and then the next morning he would enter into the camp. So he lay down to sleep. And an interesting thing happened. Little Boy's spirit left his body and traveled to the spirit world. And in the spirit world, Little Boy's spirit met the seven grandfathers. Now, the seven grandfathers, I'm sure, did not talk in today's vernacular. I'm sure they were much more dignified and traditional. But had they been speaking in today's vernacular, what they might have said to Little Boy is, "We've got some good news and some bad news for you. The good news is you have indeed amassed a great deal of very important knowledge. And this knowledge will, in fact, help your people in their suffering. The bad news, however, is that this knowledge remains disconnected, disorganized, and incoherent. You don't yet know what you need in order to help your people properly. But we will help you. We will help you by filling in the missing part of your knowledge with the seven teachings. Then the seven teachings will represent the pathway to physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being and will coordinate and organize all the other things that you know to make you a healer for your people. And these seven teachings are represented by the seven spirit animals, but don't get confused because the spirit animals are not real-life animals on Earth. The real-life species of animals on Earth are sort of a pale imitation of these spirit animals. So don't get confused by being too literal in connecting up these spirit animals with real animals. But the seven teachings are represented by the seven spirit animals. So the teaching of wisdom is represented by the beaver. The teaching of love is represented by the spirit eagle. The teaching of respect is represented by the spirit buffalo. Courage is represented by the bear. Humility by the wolf. Sasquatch, or the wilderness man, represents the teaching of honesty. And finally, the spirit turtle represents the teaching of truth. So these, little boy, are the seven teachings. And these are the additional things that you need to make your learning whole and to become a healer for your people. Now, meanwhile, back at the camp, dawn had risen, and the people went about their business and wandered out from the camp. And I'm pretty sure that no one at the camp had any recollection that years ago this little child had wandered off, never to be seen again. And I'm sure that even if anybody remembered, nobody connected this old man whose body they saw by the path with that child who had left years ago. And all they knew was a body was by the path that appeared to them to be a dead body. So this caused the people to be curious and to gather around. Well, at that point, little boy's spirit now left the world of the grandfathers, the spirit world, and returned his body. And the people were amazed that this apparently dead body had returned to life. But little boy had more important things on his mind. He said, "Don't get all excited about this apparent magic stuff. This is not what I'm here for. I am here as a teacher. I am here as a healer. And you must listen to me because I have this very important message. And thanks to the teachings that I learned in the spirit world, I now have it coordinated and organized in a way that we can all learn and all work from, and we can all be healthy and happy again." So he explained to his people what he had learned on the journey and all the things that he had learned from the world of nature and the teachings that he had learned from the grandfathers. And as he taught them, the people realized that what had happened. The people began to realize how they had neglected the teachings of the Creator, how they had moved away from the Mother Nature and the world, and what had to happen in order for them to be restored. And so through little boy's teachings, the people again became strong and healthy, and they vowed never again to forget the Creator and his teachings and to be the Anishinaabe, strong and healthy people forevermore. So that's the story of little boy. And you might wonder what this has to do with the white coat ceremony at a medical school. So I would like to share with you some meditations on why I think this story is important to us and why, in fact, it's rather moving that a group of people as far away from us in time and in scientific knowledge could have so put together this story in a way that I think speaks to us today very directly. First of all, they identified quite correctly, the authors of this story, that a commitment to a life as a healer, a commitment to a life in medicine, is indeed a lifelong commitment. And think of it comparing to the world of the Anishinaabe, which was a very static world, that if a juniper berry was a good treatment for faintness and dizziness when little boy was young, it was also a good treatment for faintness and dizziness when he got old. And he didn't have to worry about what was the latest discovery in the pharmacopoeia of his time. What he learned was good for his whole lifetime. And contrast that today with the rapid obsolescence of medical knowledge. And even in that static time, it was nonetheless a lifelong quest in order to learn what you needed to learn to become a healer. So even more can we take this lesson to heart today. Little boy never forgot why he set off on his quest, that he remembered that what it meant to be called to relieve the suffering of others, what it meant to be called to be a healer, what it meant to be called to help one's fellow human beings. He knew this was why he was there and what gave the purpose to this entire lifelong quest. And he warned us that the more that we let other motives and other concerns, including money, get in the way of that the remembrance of that calling, the more tenuous is our grasp on physicianship, the more tenuous is our grasp on what it means to be a doctor, what it means to be a healer. The grandfathers told little boy that no matter how much technical knowledge he had managed to acquire in his wide travels throughout his entire lifetime, he was not ready to become a healer until he had learned more. And what was the more? What was this extra? If you look in Western ethics for the seven teachings, you find that they mirror exactly what in ethics since the time of Aristotle has been called virtue. Now, what is virtue? Virtue is approach to ethics, and many of the approaches to ethics we teach in medical school focus on decision-making. They focus on, here is the circumstance in which you're in today, right now, what should you do? You could do this, you could do that, which is the right course of action? Virtue is different. Virtue is another approach. Virtue says not what do you do now, it says what sort of person are you? What is the content of your character? What are the enduring traits that characterize you as a moral human being? And so when we talk about virtues, we talk about things like how the healer is courageous, the healer is humble, the healer is honest, the healer is compassionate, and we get the typical list of virtues of the ideal healer, and we get the seven teachings of the grandfathers pretty much. And there's one of those you might wonder about for a minute. You might wonder about this one that was called love. What does it mean to say that love is one of the key virtues to which the would-be healer must aspire? We have found so many parallels between this story and our modern quest to become good physicians, to become healers in medicine, that it would be somewhat odd if we couldn't find a lesson in the ego as well, wouldn't it? And to understand what we might be pointed toward, what we might be challenged to by the teaching of love, we might turn to another Canadian expert, Arthur Frank, this sociologist at Calgary, who in his book, The Renewal of Generosity, reflected on why is it that today when people, sick people, come to see doctors, when today they come to the hospital, they find lots of things, they find lots of technology. If they're lucky, they may find a cure. But two things they don't find very much of is joy and generosity. And he asked, how often is it that people come to a doctor, that people come to a hospital, and feel welcomed? And so what I think the ego is teaching us and what the ego challenges us to do is a charge that I will give all of you students. I will say to you as you go, as you don your white coats and as you go forward, talk to patients and find out from patients which doctor's name, when you say to them a particular doctor they might have seen, brings a special sparkle to their eyes. And then go watch that doctor and figure out what is it about that doctor that makes the patient react to the doctor that way. Look at your peers, your fellow students, the residents, the doctors. Which of them seem to have the strongest sense of joy in what they do? Which of them seem most capable of sharing that joy with each other, with you, and with their patients? How do they do it? What is it about them that keeps that joy so strong in them? How could you learn to emulate some of those traits yourself more than perhaps what you do today? So I give you that charge, and I hope that you find joy in your travels from here on out as you don your white coat, and I hope you will share that joy with your patients and become the kind of healers that everyone here will be proud of. Thank you very much.
His journey through medical school. Alexandre will speak to us now.
Okay, so thank you, parents, friends, and family members, for coming today to support a medical student that you care about. I'm sure they're grateful you're here. And thank you to the faculty and organizers for today's ceremony and for extending me an invitation to speak to you today to give a student's perspective on the White Coat Ceremony and what it means to me. The White Coat Ceremony marks the beginning of your journey from the classroom into clinical practice. This means that instead of exclusively learning from textbooks, course backs, and lectures, you'll be dealing with an aspect of medicine that is much more human and certainly much more uncertain. I think that the main reason why I was asked here today is because my experience in medical school has been somewhat unique. I've seen the practice of medicine from the student as well as the more human perspective, and my goal while I'm speaking to you here is to talk about some of my experiences and to try to relate them to what you will be going through. My life as a medical student has been shaped by the fact that I'm also a patient, and there are several lessons that I've learned drawing from both roles. The first thing I would like to share is that the profession we have chosen is truly unique, in that patients give us the privilege of seeing them when they are in their most vulnerable states. It may not always occur to us, but how we conduct ourselves during these encounters can be the difference between a patient going home feeling desperate and alone or hopeful and supported. I learned this from experience, not as a medical student, but as a patient. When I was in my first rotation of clerkship, surgery at the Jewish General Hospital, I noticed a numb spot developing on my left temple. After consults with emergency doctors, neurologists, CT scans, and an MRI, I was finally diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Normally, MS is a pretty slowly progressive disease, but unfortunately in my case, it took only a few months before my walking, endurance, vision, and countless other abilities were taken away from me. Only 6 months after my diagnosis, my doctors were forced to sit me down and explain to me that at the rate my disease was progressing, there was a good chance that within 1 to 2 years, I was going to wind up in a wheelchair. Instead of appearing bleak and powerless when confronted by an extremely difficult situation, my doctor immediately sprung into a completely goal-oriented mode. He listed my treatment options out clearly and made sure that I understood that there were still options available to me. I will always be thankful to him and will always remember that visit because after hearing some of the worst news of my life, I felt nothing but hope for the future during the drive home. And looking back on it now, I realize that it is because of how my doctor handled our encounter that I felt that way. It may not always be obvious to us as students, but the 20 to 30 minutes that you spend with a patient, while it may be just another appointment and a very busy day for you, it can make all the difference to them and can be the difference between them leaving the hospital terrified or feeling in control of their situation. I found that realizing this has helped me with my responsibilities as a medical student, as there have been many times when I've seen that same helpless, scared look on a patient's face at the end of a conversation. I found that in these instances, it has been helpful to take a few minutes to go through what we just talked about, ask if they have any questions, and to make sure they know and understand what the next step in their management will be. This can do more than you realize for a patient's peace of mind. Something else that I have learned that seems to be a revelation to most medical students, I know it was for me, is how tough medical school really is. There is not one of my classmates that has not struggled with the demands of clerkship. You're expected to work 80 hours a week, be pleasant and friendly at all times, to do all the work that no one else really wants to do, and to try to fit in studying and reading somewhere in between, not to mention a personal life. There will be moments when you're frustrated, upset, exhausted, and unsure of yourselves. And there will be days when the last thing you ever want to do is step back in the hospital. I know that I felt that way. But you'll develop ways to handle it. Go to see a movie or go out for dinner with friends one night instead of studying. Trust me when I say that you'll need to take this time for yourself to do well in your rotations, or at least to keep from losing your minds. I remember one night working in psychiatric emergency department. I was evaluating a 26-year-old girl who was found walking up to Carrie in her nightgown. In the middle of our conversation, she started crying hysterically, ripped the pen right out of my hands, and took a couple of swings at me. Luckily, she missed. That was definitely one of the nights I took some time for myself. When I got home, I relaxed and did my best not to think about it for the rest of the night. And sometimes that's exactly what you're going to need. Sorry. The last thing I wanted to talk about was how lucky we are to be part of a profession that gives so much to so many and is constantly moving forward towards breakthroughs that were unheard of in the past. Some of the students sitting right in this room will likely become one of the innovators who come up with new treatments that help patients in ways which are unimaginable to most of us right now. Again, I'm speaking from experience. When I found myself in what seemed like a hopeless situation, my doctor told me about a new experimental treatment for multiple sclerosis where they offer a bone marrow stem cell transplant for aggressive and formerly untreatable types of MS. I was the 19th person in Canada to undergo this treatment, and so far none of the first 19 patients, myself included, have had any further progression of their disease. Thank you. Nothing yet. If this had been only 10 years ago, I may be giving this speech from a wheelchair, but thanks to my visionary doctors and innovation in medicine, I'm now back in medical school and I'm planning on graduating with the class of 2010. Thanks again. As students who are mostly taught the fundamentals of medicine, and rightly so, because I think that it would be difficult to think outside of the box without first knowing what that box actually is. Not everyone is made to be an innovator. In fact, one thing I've learned from my experiences is that I'm probably not one of those people who are cut out for it. My only advice to you would be to stay open to new ideas in medicine because these new ideas are what drive us forward. And by staying open to them, you just may change one of your patients' lives. So as you put on your white coat today, enjoy it, because getting to where you are now is definitely an achievement in itself. but also know that this marks the beginning of your careers as doctors. You're in the unique position to be able to affect people's lives in profound ways and to make a living doing it. I hope that how incredible that is never becomes lost on you. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandre. We'll now proceed to the donning of the white coats. You'll be helped on with your coats by Dr. Don Boudreau, Director of Physicianship Curriculum Development, and by Dr. Namta Gupta, Assistant Dean for Student Affairs for the Faculty of Medicine. I'd ask the students if you can please be ready at the lower step so you can come up immediately when your name is called, and we're calling you in alphabetical order. And I would ask everybody if you could hold your applause to the very end, just because there's a lot of students here. So if we could have Martin, Ahmad, Alexandre down here ready to go. Good. Okay. Martin Aguilar-Shadonsky. Ahmad Al-Masri. Alexandre Amir. Amanda Angelus. Tiberio Angel. And Allison Baker. Jacques Balaya. Haran Balendra. Daniel Banasek. David Bannon. Maher Barbarian. Robert Joshua Batat. Amin Mohammed Ben Masoud. David Berger Richardson. Aaron Jason Billick. Anna Maria Blanchard. Chloe Bogatti. Kenneth William Bona. Adrian Boone. Mathieu Boudier-Révéré. Caleb Abaka Buhaidi. Yeah. Elise Boulanger, Alexandre Boutet, Michael Vincent James Braganza, Seema Brar, Jessica Breton, Nicolas Cadet, Eric Carpentier, Tanya Castellino, Julia Chabot, Nicola Shadi, Yamin Mohammed Shanda, Bronco, you could always switch them later, you know. You're good. Marie-Ève Chatier. Right? Okay. All right, are we good to go? All right. Where are we at? Marie-Ève? Have you, Marie-Ève is there? You haven't had your coat yet. One more to go? Okay. Oh, yeah, I mean, I hope it was really worth it, that photo. Yushi? Okay, Yushi Shen. Hang Chen. Elizabeth Aldis Chertkow, Jessica Estelle Florence Sheetright. Valérie Clermont. Naïma Clermont-Dejean. Zoe Costa Von Ash. James Curtis. Jean Deschamps. Rachel Carmen Deschamps. Maheen Diwan. Allison Downs. Justin Drager. Laura Marie Drudy. Stephanie Du... Oh, sorry. Stephanie Duchamp-Benard. Raven Tanya Dumont-Maurice. Richard James Dunbar Yaffe. Kashaya Esafani. Human Farzin. Miguel Fernandez. Niall Filewood. Constantin Philip. Yulia Laura Philip. Zoe Fortier-Morissette. Joseph Fragapani. Laura Friedman. Natalie Erica Gans. Jared Garfinkel. Michael Aaron Garfinkel. Milena Garofalo. Belinda Goh. Nyla Maria Goslin Papadopoulos. Akshat Gotra. Catherine Gilbo. Mayuri Gupta. Lauren K. Hamlin Douglas. Adam Hart. Noura Hassan, Andrea Louise Hathaway, Andrew John Helmers, Catalina Hernandez Torres, Kenneth Xing Chang Wang, Margaret Atherton Hull, Nora Hutchinson, Amanda Sharon Ishayak, Iwana Gabriela Julius, Frank Jiang, Dorota Maria Kadlubowska, Radoslaw Kaminski, Sani James Karam, Sean Carls, Lauren Alyssa Katz, Lin Yuan Kong, Anne Catherine Korkidakis, and Andrew Kuri. Irina Kudrina, Alexandre Labelle, Maxime Labelle, Alicia Niki Lambrinakos Raymond, Jean-Michel Lavoie, Brian Lee, Michelle Sin Lee, Benedict Lefebvre, Claire Lefebvre, Josh Aaron Levin, Philip Levine, Annie Lee, we keep going. Okay. Okay. E. Daniel Lee, Yalin Lin. Lei Ma, Julian Samuel Mackenzie Fetter. Samuel Mamane, Cristiano Martello. Patrick Mazzino, Genevieve Mathis. Lauren Lee McGruthers, Aaron McKay. Jonathan Michelli, David Martin Milo. Parai Shiva Misra, Mandana Musavi. Fiona Mutalib, Alexander Edward Nataros, Madhur Nayan, Jessica Namey. Joshua Ning Tamstra, Julie Mai Van Nguyen, Maxime Noro Nguyen. Samuel Obaid, Sammy Obaid. Lee Chantel Ferrand. Magdalena Pichinska. Laura Pilauzi Edmonds. Samuel Piro. Ipshita Prakash. Alexandre Prou. Darylin Putt. Philip Quigley. Bojano Radovanovic. Nyla Ramji. Stephanie Ramkumar. Glenn Philip Rankin Jardin. Lee Reichman, Mark Richard Albert, Dale Robertson, Marie-Ève Jean Robinson, Matthew Robinson, Michael Roskies, Joe Saliba, Mireille Sayeg, now, Mireille. Matthew Siedler. Jillian Amanda Seedman. Lauren Self. Miril Solaski. Valeria Stoinova, Bindu Surish, Yumi Tanaka, Hannah Susan Thomas, Zoe Thomas, Dorothea Ticas, Jennifer Tueg, Xiaotian Tran, Raphael Trudeau-Rivet, Catherine Trong, Curran Verma, Coria Volpe, Susan Maria Wachil, Chan Chang Wang, Andrew Mark Weinstock, Magenta White Potter Male, Robin Wiviot, Stephanie Wong, Jenny Ines Wu, Lee Chin Su, Ji Wei Yang, Yolaine Yim, Jung Chul Yun, Han Zeng, Jia Zeng, Sophia Nadia Zisman Coleman, Jiamin Zeng. And now I'd like you to invite to give them all a big round of applause. I'd like to now ask Sophia Zisman Coleman, class president for the class of 2012, to speak to the class and then to lead the class in their class pledge. Sophia.
Dean Levin and faculty, our guests and fellow students, it is my honor to express on behalf of my classmates our thanks for this special ceremony. Firstly, to the Wiener family for their generosity and for their sensitivity in remembering how meaningful this passage from books to bedside is for our class. What a wonderful way this is to celebrate Dr. Joseph Wiener, who himself understood the critical influence a teacher has for a young student. To Dean Levin, Associate Dean Pickering, and to our other professors, thank you for making today's events possible. We are grateful for the efforts you make to teach us well and for the role you play in preparing us for our lives as doctors, not only in the lectures you give, but also in the example that you set. Our wish is that we will always give you reason to have pride in our work. Finally, we would like to thank Alexander Normandin and Dr. Howard Brody for their thoughtful and insightful words this afternoon. Now I'd like to ask the class of 2012 to please stand up for the reading of the pledge. And to join me at the line, we pledge together. Remember the excitement of our first days as medical students? That early passion, which we surely feel again today, will be our motivation throughout our careers as we strive for excellence in delivery of care, scientific exploration, and ethical conduct for the benefit of our patients, colleagues, and society. In full awareness that this journey is ongoing, recognizing our diverse talents and the value of supporting each other's health and well-being, that we may fulfill our social and professional mandates, and appreciating that, through the generosity of our time, knowledge, and understanding, our collective achievement will exceed our individual contributions. We pledge together to our patients and society to be fully present with you, recognizing the unique fabric of your existence, to learn from our mistakes and from you, that we may gain wisdom to adapt our methods to serve you better. When we do meet with clinical and innovative success, to remain grounded without pride or complacency, that we may continue rephrasing our questions and searching for answers within the context of mutual respect, openness, and trust. To be your advocates, not just in words, but through our actions, your social struggles are ours too. We seek to transcend our differences and work together across disciplines that we may make you well, keep you well, and prevent your illnesses, no matter your background or status. We recognize that microscopic pathologies often reflect larger social challenges. We will do our best to address those social determinants that prevent you from maintaining health and well-being. To medicine, we commit, both as career and vocation, to not be the servants of science, nature, nations, personal beliefs, or even our desire to preserve life. Understanding the reality of our own mortality, we endeavor instead to heal our fellow human beings and free them constraints so that they may flourish. We embark upon this calling with humility, fervor, and love for humanity.
Et maintenant, en français, s'il vous plaît, me joignez aux lignes, ensemble, nous nous engageons. Vous rappelez-vous l'excitation de nos premières journées en médecine? Cette passion naissante que nous ressentons très certainement encore aujourd'hui sera notre motivation tout au long de notre carrière, alors que nous poursuivrons l'excellence en prodiguant des soins, en effectuant de la recherche scientifique et en adoptant un comportement éthique pour le bénéfice de nos patients, de nos collègues et de la société. Pleinement conscient de la nature continuelle du processus, bien au fait de la diversité de nos talents et de l'importance de veiller mutuellement à notre santé et à notre bien-être, afin d'accomplir notre mandat social et professionnel, reconnaissant que, grâce à la générosité de nos temps, de nos connaissances et de notre compréhension, notre accomplissement collectif dépassera notre contribution individuelle. Ensemble, nous nous engageons envers nos patients et la société à être entièrement présents avec vous et à reconnaître le caractère unique de votre existence, à apprendre de nos erreurs et de vous pour que nous puissions acquérir la sagesse d'adopter nos méthodes pour mieux vous servir, à déployer des efforts lorsque nous obtenons un succès clinique et innovateur pour garder les pieds sur terre sans fierté ni suffisance, afin de continuer à reformuler nos questions et à chercher des réponses dans un contexte de respect, d'ouverture et de confiance mutuelle. Nous engageons à vous défendre, non seulement par nos mots, mais aussi par nos actions. Vos luttes sociales sont également les nôtres. Nous cherchons à concilier, à travailler ensemble de manière interdisciplinaire pour rétablir votre santé, maintenir votre santé et vous protéger contre la maladie, peu importe vos antécédents ou votre statut. Nous reconnaissons que les pathologies microscopiques sont souvent le reflet des défis sociaux plus importants. Nous ferons de notre mieux pour éliminer les facteurs sociaux qui vous empêchent de conserver santé et bien-être. Envers la médecine, nos carrières et notre vocation, nous vous engageons à ne devenir ni de la science, ni de la nature, ni des nations, ni de croyances personnelles, ni même de nos désirs de préserver la vie. Conscients de la réalité de notre propre caractère mortel, nous lutterons plutôt pour guérir les autres êtres humains et les libérer des contraintes pour qu'ils puissent s'épanouir. Nous nous engageons dans cette voie avec humilité, ferveur et amour pour l'humanité.
The class of 2012 can be seated. We have a group of special faculty members here today. These are the Osler Fellows for the class of 2012. These are some of our best faculty members who have been assigned as teachers and mentors for groups of 5 to 6 students and who meet with their groups starting in first year all the way through to graduation. I'd like the Osler Fellows for the class of 2012, as well as Dr. Barry Slapkoff, director of the Osler Fellow Program, to stand so that we can acknowledge your contribution. All students will receive a gift of 2 Osler books. Please pick them up in room 519 after we're finished here. And all Osler fellows will also be receiving a gift of Osler's writings. If you could come to the front of the amphitheater at the end, Anne Briggs will ensure that you get your copy. Thank you to everybody who came today, and a special thank you to Anne Briggs, Silvana DeLolo, the entire undergraduate medical education administrative staff who are standing over here, to Leo Titero and his staff. This day couldn't happen without them, and more importantly, we couldn't train these future physicians without them. Maintenant, j'aimerais vous tous inviter au 6e étage pour une réception pour nos étudiantes et étudiantes et leurs familles. Nous espérons avoir l'occasion de rencontrer plusieurs parmi vous. And finally, I can't think of a better wish to end this with than that which Barry Slotkoff gave to me, the director of our physician apprenticeship program. Enjoy the day, and with humility, take pride in your accomplishments. Thank you.